Previously on the Critical Mass Podcast.
Is this thing on? Okay.
I seen it happen. Eat a duck.
You saw a catfish eat a duck?
It's fuel for the imagination.
Do you hear things too?
Sound bites. Keep them frozen. They're good.
I hear someone.
No, don't turn it down.
Hi, I'm Winston.
I'm Curtis.
And you are in the reaction chamber at the Critical Mass Podcast. Thanks for joining us again. We've got a tight little lineup for you today. We're going to start off with a little discussion of the closing of the spring season on the CW network and on ABC and some others. And we got, of course, Godzilla come out this weekend, and I got to sneak off to see that. So I want to talk about that, and we're going to close out with a discussion on the effects of scale in a couple of RPGs and just share some observations. But enough with this. You want to get right to it. Curtis, why don't you bring us up to speed on what happened on our TV shows on the CW? And by our TV shows, I mean our TV shows. I mean those TV shows for which we are personally responsible and have paid for.
Well, Supernatural didn't end yet, is it? Supernatural didn't do its season finale yet either.
This week. It's either if they didn't do it this week, it's next week.
I have no idea.
I know. But, you know, part of the problem there is everything, and literally everything we watch is time delayed. It's off of the DVR, or
yeah. Well, I watch it ahead of you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, that, I don't hold
if
that.
If I think about it,
I do good to get to the time that we get to those few shows that we watch here.
Oh, it's true.
Twice a week. So, bring us up to speed with. I don't know. Can you do a spoiler-free recap of Arrow and
the city doesn't get destroyed.
The city doesn't. How about just some of the more obvious closing points? Yeah, we knew we saw this coming. Maybe some other stuff.
No major characters died.
No major.
I mean, some of the obvious things.
Okay. How about this? What does it? It's look into the future. What does it look like they are setting up for next season of Arrow? Come on, you were on about this earlier.
Ollie's mayor.
Tell us about it.
Well,
why
Blood got killed?
Well, that
his mom's dead. All the DAs are wiped out. The police commissioner is wiped out. They need a new leader. They need someone to take the reins. Everything's decimated, and how else better can he help his city? Because that's what he's pushing for towards this back half season. The city.
Right, the city.
Helping
needs
them
him.
More. And right now, they need a mayor. Who else is there? Lance?
Well.
No, he's going to be police commissioner. Or detective, okay. And his lieutenant's going to get promoted up. Because he's detective again. So that we need that. So I think Ollie, since you told me in the comics, he did do mayor.
Yeah, they did.
And if
that
they
story.
Want to touch on it, they'll let him do it. Maybe he'll be interim mayor until an election because they need someone.
I can see that. I can see them doing that. Starling City's favorite son.
Yeah. And they could just jump into the next season with it being close to the new election and his
Citizen
time
queen.
Is over. And they just tell us what he's been doing and what he's been dealing with.
I can see that. I can see a lot of story hooks and fallout from that.
That'd be
but,
cool.
So Arrow continues to impress us. The structure of the flashback sequence, the parallel stories, the fact that they're touching on they're bringing in the Rogues Gallery predominantly from Batman because he's got the best villains,
and he's got the non-powered villains,
and he's got the non-powered villains.
That's the
right.
kicker. He's got the techies,
yeah,
or crazies.
But it's a good design decision. It's a good design decision, and of course Stephen Amell is, you know, continues to bring it as Oliver Queen.
He's very cool.
It's not a casting choice that I would have seen coming. He doesn't look like the, You know, he doesn't look like Ollie in the comic books. He doesn't, this character doesn't act like Oliver Queen in the comic books. It's a, but, and you know, and we've got friends who that aspect of the show has put them off of Arrow entirely.
Yeah, because they're diehards, but.
I understand that. I mean, what they did with Smallville put me off of the show.
We're not going there.
Yeah, you're right. We're not going there. But what they have done with Arrow, I think, has been a good and new take on the subject, and I've really enjoyed it. And it's just only been getting better.
They're taking the pieces from the comics that everybody knows and inserting them in the story to an extent, but telling a different story.
Right. Well, you know, they're doing the same thing that they did with Smallville in this respect. They're trickling out the superpowers.
Oh, yeah.
And this is something that they noticed when they did Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
You know, they dropped us right into all of this, and everybody's got superpowers, and not only did it make the show hugely expensive, but it alienated a core audience that was not composed of sci-fi nerds.
That is true.
So, and every, you know, the only thing that we've had stick around that caters to that core audience on this network has been Supernatural.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of that show, it was a very, you know, by-the-numbers formula. And I think it really succeeded in large part because the largest viewing audience of CW is, you know, women and girls. And, yeah. You know, it had Jensen Ackles and...
Padalecki.
Yeah, Jared Padalecki with... The movie star charm and the dreamy eyes and you know, all the stuff that they tease each other about on the
God, yeah.
But and I think that carried it long enough for the show to find a solid footing outside of just, you know, just the tween base.
I like that they shot monsters.
Well, there you go. You know, they upped the violence level, and
they had a nice level during the first season still. I mean, I was satisfied with it.
Well, yeah, they did.
They just went more war now, you know.
But I was thinking of the CW network in general.
Ah.
You know, CW was coming off of, I mean, before Supernatural and Vampire Diaries and
they were squeaking along.
They were riding the dregs of WB,
yeah,
on reruns and on sitcoms and just a bunch of stuff that just was completely unmemorable. And I think that that breaking the formula. I don't know if Arrow is the first one to really break that formula. No, that would have to be Smallville because that was a CW show.
Yeah,
Smallville is the one that really paved the road for them in this respect.
Show them
for
what
everybody,
not to do.
Even for Supernatural.
Show them what not to do now.
Show it well. It showed them what not to do, but it showed them what to do. What not to do if you don't want to alienate your core audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you trickle in these little sci-fi things. You yeah. drop these little hints to appeal to the geeks in your
yeah,
in
but
your
the
crowd.
Other problem is, it's Superman.
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, he was already...
You can't ever get away from that.
He's so damn powerful. The small stuff he could handle quick and easy, so they had to do it a certain rate. I just think they just overdid it in some spots.
Yeah. And we had mentioned earlier, I was wondering if they were going to mix Smallville elements into Arrow. I had completely forgotten. They've already done both Flash and Green Arrow in Smallville, haven't
they? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's not a worry. That's not going to be an issue. But CW is looking good for the coming year. Supernatural's been renewed for a tenth seasons on this little nothing, you know, this little rinky-dink network like CW.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny to say that now because, you know, 20 years ago people were saying, cartoon with yellow-skinned people on a rinky-dink network like Fox, it'll fold, the cartoon won't go anywhere, the network won't be around next year.
No.
So, you know, CW may be, they're facing more competition than Fox did back then, but... who knows? That we may be seeing the growth of a new network that's got its own legs.
Yeah.
But...
to an extent.
Yeah. Anyway. So, what Supernatural's coming back, Arrow's coming back, we're getting a new Flash TV series, and that, that looks
awesome.
Really, really cool. Very excited about that. Of course, they're doing vampire stuff and Beauty and the Beast stuff, and I haven't heard whether or not Beauty and the Beast is coming back for a third season.
Thought it got canceled.
Did it?
I don't know. I didn't keep track.
I watched all of first season. I thought, I was very afraid that season one was going to be The Werewolf Diaries. And, To my surprise, I got a police procedural out of it. For at least the first, for at least about half of the season. And when it came back for season two, I didn't pick back up on it.
Yeah.
So I just don't know what's going on, but, I like the girl that they've got, that they've got as the lead, and I think that if they're going to push it, I think it could be a good thing. But who knows? Maybe I'll go back and watch season two on demand and just completely change my mind. Who knows?
Yeah.
So enough with television. The spring lineup's closing down. We're winding up for the fall. But none of that matters. And why does none of that matter? Because Godzilla has stomped San Francisco and Honolulu and
beautiful.
Tokyo.
He shows no discrimination. He destroys everything equally. It's
yes,
awesome.
He does. The new Godzilla is flipping awesome. I am very pleased. It's not a perfect film. Nothing is.
Fight Club.
But the new Godzilla is very much an homage to Ishiro Honda's 1954 film, several sequences being recreations of scenes from that film.
Yeah.
And, of course, Godzilla keeps getting bigger. His last appearance, he was 300 feet tall. They've added another 50 feet to him. The director said that he wanted the monster to be big enough to be seen over the skyline, but not so big that he couldn't be obscured by fog and smoke and debris and other effects. And I tell you what, the judicious usage of obscuring effects in that film really adds to the dramatic atmosphere of it. This is a very atmospheric film.
Cool.
If Matthew Broderick made something that was goofy sitcom and, the TriStar Toho people gave us campy adventure beforehand. This is something that goes back to Honda's original vision. It's moody, it's gritty, it's very atmospheric. The movie just overpowers you in every sensation. The music picks you up and sweeps you away with these grand, sweeping symphonic movements during the film.
Big music, big monsters.
Exactly. Big music, big monsters. And everything about this film is big and powerful. Not over the top, let's say, but big and powerful and exceedingly destructive. it's very cool. And of course they don't spend a whole lot of time developing the plot, as it were. It's lifted straight from the disaster film of your choice.
Goddamn.
You know, hero gets separated from family, has to get back to
it. I love you.
Exactly. And you know what? It works because at its heart, this is a disaster film.
Yeah.
And we get a big mutant brawl in the middle of it. And that's beautiful too.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I was really impressed with, I was really happy that they didn't go with, mutated by space aliens, experiment of the government. They didn't blame everything on radioactive fallout and all of this other stuff. They established,
which is nice.
Yeah, they established very early on that Godzilla is an alpha predator from an age before
man,
way before man. And back in 54, we didn't create it, the nuclear sub woke it up.
Yeah.
And everything since then has been an attempt to, an attempt to kill Godzilla. And every nuclear action since then has been an attempt to kill Godzilla.
Which I thought was amusing
because they really didn't, but they really didn't. They didn't even knock him out cold. They just kind of annoyed him enough so that he left.
It's like, damn bugs.
And it's a theme that runs throughout the film. Godzilla is described as Mother Nature's natural antibiotic.
Force of nature.
Yeah, he is a force of nature. He is nature's enforcer. And when the other alpha predators emerge from prehistory to wreak their own bloody vengeance on mankind, Godzilla shows up because that's his job. And he gets paid by Gaia the Titan.
Awesome.
You know, he is literally a force of nature that mankind cannot influence, cannot control, cannot direct. And everything about this film is designed to put man back in their place at beneath these giant monsters. It's very, very moody, and it is very terrifying. My only real complaint about the film is that the director seems to absolutely love his big-eyed children. There are children with large, weeping, soulful gazes, strategically scattered throughout the film, and...
Well, they're the ones that are truly helpless.
Exactly. I get it. It's annoying. But at the end of the day, it's Godzilla.
Yep.
And all of the required things were there. The atomic breath was right in place.
Awesome.
Did it right. The opponents were freaking scary monsters. And they had good origin stories, and there were some quirks in the film, but it wasn't anything that I am not willing to overlook.
Well, which that's
is good. They kept the Toho design. This Godzilla could be a man in a rubber costume,
which is cool.
Because he's got that classic build, the big bulky body and the stumpy legs.
Did you think they actually used an actor and just scanned? Because I know they can do that.
I know they could, but I really doubt it. I think it would be...
You'll find out on the Blu-ray.
Exactly. I think it would be problematic to have built the monster and the sets and the stuff to get the level of detail that they do, especially with Hollywood CGI industry the way it is. I think it was just more cost effective for them to do the whole thing digitally than to try and, try to do the monster, monster makeup. But that's just my impression. And I did notice that they kept the Godzilla fighting moves, the classic Godzilla fighting moves.
Simple,
the tail sweep and the body slam and the club with the hands.
That's all Godzilla needs. Or the Dim Mac.
The Dim Mac. But it was good, and it was very cool. Judicious use of revealing the monster and leading up to the big fight scenes. And I am pleased in almost every way. There are a few moments where you just kind of hand wave it and say, okay, well, he's the hero, we'll let it go. But for the most part, I'm very pleased, and I liked this film.
Cool.
So, that leads us directly or indirectly to the discussion. Our RPG discussion is the subject of scale in RPGs, because when you take a film, one of the disconnects in the Godzilla film was the National Guardsmen and the regular army men rushing up to Godzilla's with M4s. Right. And unleashing clip after clip into his bony hide. And to his credit, Godzilla didn't even notice.
Because ching.
But that's, so scale of this, disparate capability of this kind is handled a couple of different ways in most RPGs, and we can divide these into a few classes. Kurt, why don't you start us off with the way Pathfinder and D20 and these other games, how Pathfinder and Palladium and these games handle giant monsters versus puny humans.
Okay. Well, the giant monsters, when they get bigger, or a critter, you want to make it bigger, as it goes up in scale, it gets stronger, more hit points, easier to hit, but then gets slower, so it loses dex. I mean, and makes it more challenging. It works the same for D&D, D20.
Yep.
And mostly those two.
Yeah, those are our two big number systems. Those are the ones that just they cope with this thing just by stacking those hit points on and stacking those strength on. You know, if a human's got strength 10, Godzilla's got to have strength 1,000.
Yes.
You know, if an M1 Abram has an AR of 18 and 500 hit points, you know, Godzilla's got an AR of 180.
Well,
and
no, he's not that hard to hit. He'd have the armor from hell, or you know.
But yeah, you know, but you get the point.
Oh yeah,
you know, they make things tough just simply by stacking up the numbers.
Yeah,
Palladium makes a kind of attempt to scale things with mega damage, but it's
that works for Rifts. But in their fantasy setting, it goes back to SDC and right. AR, and the AR is the big thing.
But even the mega damage, I mean, the bigger creatures have more, and they're more and more tougher. And it's just a numbers game.
Yeah, they do more damage, they can hit you easier, whatever.
Yeah.
Have something awesome.
So it's not an illegitimate way to handle disparate scale, but it does kind of lead to a scenario where a lone trooper with a 556 NATO can, if he has enough time and bullets and lucky die rolls, take out Godzilla.
Yes. No. It depends on the system. I mean, like, it was Palladium, a Rifts. Well, Rifts, he never mega damage because the AR doesn't do mega damage.
Right.
So he never do that. And then they play in fantasy, he would eventually. And then Pathfinder and D20, basically. I looked up the kaijus and the big monsters in the bestiary after it. Well, they're got a huge AC, and then they got DR epic.
Just big, right.
So you can't hurt them unless you got a badass weapon.
Right, right. So. And that's worth mentioning, because they that is an attempt. It's not really a scale, though, because it works the same way as their other damage reduction.
Yes, but it's just they're that big. You're not meant to fight them. You are, you know, size of a can to me.
Well, that leads to another way to handle disparate scale is the way that Savage Worlds does it,
mm-hmm.
which is similar because they still stack the numbers on. I mean, just make them bigger,
larger,
bigger numbers do more and more and more and more.
Tougher, more stronger, damage,
but
bigger.
Savage Worlds uses a concept of heavy armor and heavy weapon damage and huge size.
Yes.
So basically something has to be of comparable size and or have the heavy classification before it can deal damage or, you know, be impervious to damage of lower life forms, I suppose.
Yeah, and the AP, armor-piercing.
Armor-piercing, right.
From a weapon, just to make sure you can blow through him, if you can.
Which is fine when you are dealing with things that are of an order of magnitude tougher than humans. It works well, especially for military equipment.
Yeah.
Okay? So it works well to have a tank with heavy armor and heavy weapons, and you can't really do anything to it with a pistol. But it doesn't really hold up when you start scaling up.
No. The monster then becomes too tough.
Yeah.
Too big, too strong, or you'll just blast it away and then it wasn't even a threat.
Or the die rolls become meaningless.
Yes.
Because they add a single die roll, and then, you know, Godzilla's got a plus 50 to his strength, and yeah. King Kong has a plus 25. The die rolls are essentially meaningless.
Yeah, the bonus kills.
Yeah. So it's good for the small scale, but it breaks down when you try to scale it up.
Yep.
But it's well suited to what it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you stick with Savage Worlds, which is pulp, they didn't really right. fight kaiju. They fought dinosaurs at best.
They did, and dinosaurs are not bulletproof.
No, definitely, they're good on a barbecue. but yeah. But when you go to the big stuff, you gotta go big. So it all depends on the system in the end.
Well, it does.
And what you prefer.
What you prefer. Personally, I like the way that the West End D6
yeah.
system, the one that Star Wars made famous.
Yeah, second edition, though.
Yeah, the way they handled these things was they just broke it down into scales.
Mm-hmm.
And you can affect things at your scale. And maybe one scale above you.
Yeah, if you go for two, you're pushing
it. If you get lucky.
Yeah.
But two scales above, forget about yeah. it. So you've got personal sized, and then you've got vehicle sized, and then you've got
starship
or and then large small starship.
Yeah, they got scales up to it to where, you know, they had the Death Star on the end of the scale.
Right.
You know, your damage is 1/200th.
Right, just absolutely insignificant.
Yeah.
And that works really, really well. Like you said, their example was it prevents what?
Somebody shooting down a starship with their blaster pistol.
Right.
Because in the first edition, they did that. Because we did it.
We did it. Yep.
I was wondering about that.
I confess.
Well, we're doing that. I mean, we were doing that from ship to ship. We couldn't take them out with the ship weapons. We'd pull a gun and shoot them. It's like World War I and fighting airplanes.
Yeah, which is fine if yeah. the weapons are of comparable quality. They and are. You know what? Savage Worlds supports that kind of action.
Yes, but that's, you know.
But Star Wars, it's not really, it doesn't really fit the setting.
No, because we've never seen that in the movies.
So they introduced the literal concept of scale to handle these disparate qualities. Mm-hmm. One of the other ways that we've seen capability discrepancies handled is the exponential and logarithmic differences that we see in the DC system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both the one that Mayfair did, where things were handled logarithmically, or exponentially, excuse me, and the one that, you know, the most recent one by Green Ronin, which is essentially true 20.
Yeah.
But they also include the concept of each step is double the previous step.
Mm.
You know, it allows you to have, what that does is that crunches the numbers down some. So that you can have Superman's got a strength of 25, let's say,
yeah.
and I'm too lazy to go get the book and look at it. But Superman's got a strength of 25, and Batman's got a strength of 12. Now, this makes Superman, what, 13, 14, 10? 10 times doubled, it's 10, 100, 1 to 10, 0. So roughly a billion times stronger than the, you know, the Dark Knight detective.
Yes.
But it keeps the numbers to a manageable level.
Yep.
It does lead to some really weird situations.
Yes.
But for the most part, it's a workable way to handle these differences in scale.
It's so your party could have Superman and Batman in the same party. It makes sense.
Right.
Because, you know,
and it keeps Superman from having, you know, a strength stat of 1 billion.
Yeah.
Which is really just kind of annoying.
Mm. It's Superman.
but it's still annoying. You know what? While we're thinking about it, it just occurred to me. The fusion system, which R. Talsorian did for Dragon Ball Z, just said, you know what? Forget about it.
Yeah.
Goku's got a power level of 1 million. We'll give him a stat block of 1 million. Doggone it. We're just going to go for it. And so they did. And the fusion system was... Well, there's a reason we never really ran a campaign in it.
God have mercy.
I
don't think our paper's big enough for that many zeros.
It's something different. But you know what? They wound up using multipliers on dice to do all of this stuff. So all of that to say this. Scale in Fate.
Yes.
Fate has yet a different philosophy to approaching scale. And scale is basically, in Fate, is basically defined as the number of zones that comprise a given opponent, let's call it.
Yeah, it'll work.
Yeah, so that a person is considered a single zone, and then they move within, you know, a single zone. Then a zone outside of them is considered to be one unit of movement.
Yeah.
And that works well for single-person combat. But when you put a person up against Godzilla...
Who's 700 zones.
700 zones.
Scale-wise.
Let's shrink it down a little bit, okay? Instead of Godzilla, let's bring a person up against King Kong. All right? Classic King Kong was only 25 feet long.
I could take him. Oh.
But for our purposes, that's good enough. So King Kong, being about 25 feet...
Five zones.
Well, he would be...
Human man's 5'1", so...
How long would it take a person to cross King Kong? All right, so let's call him two zones.
Okay.
All right, the lower half and then the top half, which you can't reach without moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without moving out of range of another portion.
Right.
So, King Kong's got two zones. And he can... So, it works well in keeping the damage that you are able to inflict on a larger opponent, keeping that down. But it kind of lacks a little bit. The same concept when turned around lacks somewhat when allowing big monsters to inflict massive damage on the smaller prey. There's not really anything in the core rules that addresses that.
It's yes and no. Like the main thing with the Fate would be you treat King Kong not as a straight-up opponent, but a story background. Mm. He's that aspect in the story. Your characters right. fight against it, can't do much, And if one really wants to get in the way, like the guy that put him on the stage, you'd step
right.
on him. That's what happens when you really mess with it,
Well, so you just, is that a legitimate way to handle that?
Yeah.
King Kong is a story aspect, he just steps on you.
Yeah. Because he does until they get the planes in when you get heavy artillery and stuff. But if you're a man, it's the firepower that would need it.
But the planes are of a similar scale to King Kong.
Yes, they're closer. And the same way you treat Godzilla and you just say, damn. And just, you avoid him. He is what is driving your story of your characters. They got to find out. They got to see if they can stop him. But they can't until, and they find out, oh, he's the good guy.
So, to represent this tactically, can we represent this tactic? Okay, yeah, I agree. Fate prefers to treat these things as story aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Can we treat it tactically using the Fate system? King Kong. Start with King Kong versus Jack Black. Okay? Because, he should have been stepped on and he wasn't. But whatever. So, when King Kong goes to step on Jack Black... What if we just do something as simple as apply the number of human-sized zones as shifts to the damage inflicted, or to the, they don't do damage
stress.
In Fate, stress. I know, we're still
consequence
trying to...
Consequence 6, flat.
Flat, exactly. Well, it's not an illegitimate way to do it.
No.
He's
well, you want you, well, the if he's big, a player character in your group, you want him to, you know, you don't ever let him die, you let him survive. So he's been partially crushed, broken legged, or, you know, I got in the arch of his foot and he didn't do it. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, you still get a consequence. But
well, no, this is the dramatic moment of the film.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah.
You spend your fate point, you survive.
You can, and you can do stuff like that in Fate. But it seems like a natural way to do it. That's how weaponry in general is handled.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a number of automatic damage shifts after.
Well, and that's the other
thing. Strike has already been determined.
In Fate, you know, unless you definitely want the guns to be something, you got to give them stat aspects of the shoot better. Or if not, it's just a straight roll, and then you know. It's all dependent on, you know, Godzilla, King Kong's got the bonus, or he's got the extra stuff because he's got more zone
right.
to smash with. But
well, you know, let's be honest, mass makes a difference.
Yeah. But running a Godzilla or a King Kong thing in Fate, it'd be harder. I mean, they do it Spencer's Century with the dinosaurs and stuff, but, you know. You could understand that, but, you know, it's scalable more. This is where, you know, you've seen the movie, seen everything, what happens, and man, don't screw with Godzilla too much. Can't, unless it's on a nuclear level.
Right.
And then King Kong, you just get a bunch of planes and keep shooting him until he falls. I mean...
But you know what? In both cases, you're right. These things aren't handled as tactical opponents. They're handled as story aspects.
Yes, a big thing. Take it down.
So Fate prefers to treat these things that way, which means that the story you are telling with Fate has to have something other than a tactical encounter as the climactic moment of the movie or of the story, which is also in keeping with King Kong and Godzilla, where the climactic moment of the movie isn't when when they take down the beast, it's when the family is reunited. It's when Fay Wray realizes that monkey love is
it's okay. No, what slew the beast? Beauty slew the beast.
That's right.
But it's just
right.
Like the King Kong on the tower, be like, okay, somebody called in, use your Benny, or roll your stuff to get the contact to get the planes in.
Right.
Somebody's got that aspect or that, former Air Force commander,
Right.
And they use that in their roles to call in their buddies or get the plane themselves to fly in.
So, if you're going to deal with this in Fate, you're going to have to treat it as a story aspect. Yeah. You're not really going to have your guys take on these giant monsters tactically. It's just...
Not on the ground by themselves, no.
Not on the ground by themselves. I mean, almost all of these other systems, it's possible if you're clever enough.
Yeah.
If you can get a hold of...
white weapons.
Yeah, if you can get a hold of the right gear, you can effectively scale up your people to do that.
Yeah.
With scale up the numbers to deal with the situation. With Fate, you're not scaling up numbers. You're scaling up the story.
Yes,
you're changing the victory conditions, as it were.
Yeah, and Fate makes it. I see it as being more to the monster movies that way,
right?
Because they never could take out the monsters. They watched. You survived. You interacted with everybody else. That was the game. That was the story.
Yeah,
Godzilla and stuff was the background going on because you can't do nothing.
Right, and it makes movies like Godzilla and King Kong materially different from films like Jurassic Park, which is essentially survival horror, where the monsters can be not really fought, but they can be fled from.
Or you do.
They're interacted with.
Or I got to mention this, or somebody will yell it. Pacific Rim. You go Pacific Rim, then you got giant mechs, you go fight big monsters.
Well, now they're on the same scale.
Yes, and that's the whole difference right there. And it's just like making another character or whatever, how you want to do it in the Fate.
Right.
So that's scaling it.
So that's our observations and thoughts on Godzilla handled in Fate Core. Of course, I'm still pushing the Opposing Forces Kickstarter, and I'm going to talk about a little bit of this in the rules section, and then we'll have some ways to maybe handle this with some appropriate characters in the back. But so go kickstart the project, check it out. In the meantime, thank you for joining us here in the Reaction Chamber. Kurt, you have a clever closing segue for us?
Go to Kickstarter?
Excellent. Hey, I like it. All right, let's shut this down. And by shut it down, I mean we'll see you next week.
Bye.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license.